This is Mike Dolce.
Ian McCall. Jan's Little Evil Pulver.
The Crippler Chris Levin. And you're listening to
Talking Brawls.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your host, Noel McGrath, as always. Beside me along today is normal Mark the Misery Moriarty. Mark, what's going on, man?
I'm really good. I'm better than I was on the last take, and I'm going to be better in the next. Well, no, probably be just this take, won't it?
Yeah, after what happened, the news yesterday, we're all fucking pretty pissed off in the mixed martial arts world after UFC 151 was cancelled with 8 days notice. What can we say about that? Not much, really. John Jones.
We can say something about it. We've been talking about it.
I'm
having a sleepless night.
We will. But we'll tell you who's on the show today. First of all, we have on the show today, we have Eddie Yeagan, the Filipino phenom. The Filipino phenom was supposed to face off against Dennis Seaver next weekend at UFC 151. But obviously that's been put on the rails because of a certain Mr. John.
It could be John anyone.
Okay, and also on the show we have today Luke Thomas from MMAfighting.com and SB Nation. He'll be giving a roundup of what's gone on in the MMA world this week and last week, you know, the usual shenanigans, what's going on next week at 1FC. So also on the show today we have a guy who's pretty close to home, Mark, could we say?
Yeah, probably around the corner.
And this guy is the first ever Irish champion of a major mixed martial arts promotion, the premier promotion in Europe, Cage Warriors. Conor McGregor. We were speaking to the Cage Warriors world featherweight champion, Conor McGregor. And it was obviously very disappointing news to hear about Conor with his cheekbone injury and operation he had to sustain last week in training, and he had an operation this week, so it's pretty shit that Conor to pull out of that, because there was rumours that he was going to sign for the UFC. And Mark, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there was a lot of inside talk of people in the know who were speaking very kindly of Conor's talents and Conor's way of dealing with things. I think he's definitely on the rise. I think he's still there. He's still going to be knocking on the door, and I think if he pops up to Uncle Dana in Nottingham.
In Nottingham,
flashes the belt and kind of says he's still there. What?
They're fucking Nottingham.
What?
You said Nottingham and nodded your head. You fucking.
Did I? I didn't even mean that.
Oh, sorry. Stop your bloody.
I didn't actually mean that.
Stop it. Carried away.
Oh, sorry. Wow, shit.
Mark, I'm joking, mate.
What a cunt.
It's quite funny, but.
Is the thing that, like, it's when you're crossing over barriers and getting puns which you don't even know you're getting. But no, I think, to be honest with you, that people know that he is going to be the guy who's going to break it over here as a proper mainstream sport. And he spoke to us angrily about the fact that he's pissed off that he hasn't made it a mainstream sport, yeah. And he knows it's on the way. And you can see he has the drive to do it. So
so everyone should stick around and listen to the interview later on, bitches.
You're damn right! Tough sell.
Okay, but obviously we're going to have a little chat, first of all, about where... Should we go into 151?
Yeah, let's
the ghost event first.
Let's get our anger out of the way.
First of all, I was out doing stuff yesterday, and I was actually sending a tweet to someone actually we had on the show today, and I couldn't believe it. I was fucking, you know what I mean? I was disgusted, man. I couldn't wait to see Hendo knock out Jones. It would have been probably better if Sonnen had have been able to, and then that was called off. It just, everything went against John Jones yesterday, and a lot of more things are going to go against him in the future, because he's fucking digging a big fucking hole for himself, man. That's what I think, personally.
Okay, we've already talked a lot about this today, but I'm just going to try and sum up the things which I haven't said already. I think that Greg Jackson has a vague point in a roundabout way that he was worried that, okay, look, I'm playing devil's advocate for one moment in my life here.
Fine, he
has a point in the fact that Chael Sonnen was training with Henderson. They're both wrestlers. They're both similar style. This is where I differ on my opinion. But technically, they were in the same camp and they were working together. And technically, Chael was probably, in a way, preparing for John Jones in a roundabout manner because he was training with Henderson, preparing for the fight. So you could say in a roundabout manner that maybe Chael was prepared for the fight. I don't actually believe that as a sentence. I'm just saying that, playing devil's advocate for a moment. I think that what should have happened is that Jackson should have said that, well, you know, could have, he hasn't had time to prepare, and though the fight week nothing happens, oh no, it's so harsh. But, like, you know, Chael has had no time to prepare, and he's preparing for another wrestler, another guy who fights not the same, but a pretty much the same wrestling style-y as Henderson would. It's not going to be that different. He's not losing out, and he missed his shot to just knock off the guy who's going to piss him off for the next year and a bit, or whenever it takes him to get in the fucking octagon with him.
You're probably right to a certain extent on that. but you know, where does it put mixed martial arts? It's a fucking dark day, man. Really, that a fucking, you know, a fight gets cancelled. If my car gets cancelled, all the other guys, that's what I'd be, you know, worried about and pissed off about. The guys, like, you know, on the under, basically every 16 other bloke there, they're not getting their fucking comeuppance.
Well, it's a different scale.
You know, like, he's sponsored by Nike, fucking UFC, etc. And these guys are just walking home and they like, put fucking food on the table for the families of all the guys. It's not all fucking, you know, glitz and glamour in the mixed martial arts world, as we well know.
Well, no, there's a problem where we have both kind of talked and written about, and like, for a long time, about other sports, where there's often a presumption that things are on television and they're on mainstream television. So you presume that the people in that sport are making a fuckload of money. And in football, in American football, in basketball, in baseball, in pretty much any other sport, where it's kind of unionized in a roundabout way, where players and fighters have the chance to make equal living for each other, people are usually making good money. In mixed martial arts, that's not really the way it is. The top people are making a shitload of money, and the bottom people are looking for food to eat off the fucking ground. Literally, this is going to fuck the people up on the bottom card, on the undercard here. And I don't think John Jones is thinking about that. Dana White often talks about it as a team sport, which it's not. Yeah. This balance of whether it's a team sport or an individual sport, it's very tricky. It's a team sport with your camp.
Touch or go, really, because, like, you know, you've guys like you know, on the undercard, Dennis Eder, Seaver and Eddie Egg, and, you know, and good you've fight. It's a very good fight on paper, as far as I'm concerned. Obviously, we won't get into that now.
We will be speaking.
We probably should get into it now. Yes,
let's do it in a second.
But, you know, the whole point is, at the end of the day, it's to value the sport, I think, a little bit. And the fact the sport's growing as well, it's not a good thing for this sort of thing to be happening with a fighter being a cocky ass fucking piece of fucking garbage, really. I'd like to say that. Controversial enough, his camp can go fuck themselves as well, because I've had a thing with Greg Johnson's camp before that has not, you know, gone down too well, me, the whole Evans thing, and there's been a little downward progression in Jackson's camp, and I'd probably agree with Dana White on what I said about Greg Jackson, but that's for another day.
Yeah, but I think Dana White shouldn't be saying that sort of stupid shit.
He shouldn't
show. He's the fucking head of a company. You don't see the head of any other fucking organisation saying shit like
that.
Well,
listen, he's built a company. It's worked for him. Let him run.
Yeah, but he's built a company for a bunch of hardcore fans. And that's the thing which I get pissed off at. The fact is that I'm a hardcore fan, you're a hardcore fan, lots of people listening to this are hardcore fans, and I don't want to act like that fucking indie fan who doesn't want their favourite band to be taken off them and put an American Idol. And that's the thing, that we're trying to protect it and not let it get too successful. Yeah, and I think with fucking Dana making fucking stupid comments about his prized fighter, it's devaluing his own product.
But is he his prized fighter if he's not going to fight guys who are going to, you know, step up a weight?
You fucking know that he's the fucking the face of the company for the future, and you don't want it to be.
No, not after this, he's not. No way. You won't fight a guy that's fucking lighter than him. No.
But I think he's a prick. I think he could be the bad guy face of the company.
Anderson Silva's more of a face of the company than this guy.
You don't like Anderson Silva either.
I don't like, but neither do I. The difference is I don't like him, but I respect him.
Yeah, but like
I don't respect John Jones anymore. No.
But you know he's a killing machine still. He still is really good.
No, I said, I went off on the record, on this fucking show, said Hendo would knock him out. He's no fucking chin. Machida tested chin. I saw.
But no one's knocked him out.
Machida will knock him out. I saw something in Machida. John Jones got too cocky. He's gone over himself. He's lost the run of himself. As a person, I think. I think mentally, when you see that fucking beard coming on. No, he just looks like he's just gone mental. He looks like.
But do you not think if he was too cocky, you would have just taken the fight?
He looks like. What's his face? Australian dude. Went mental in Hollywood. Australian, what's his name? Mel Gibson.
That's unfair.
He looks like Mel Gibson to a certain extent.
If he had Steven Seagal in his corner, you wouldn't be saying this.
I'm telling you, Machida will win the fucking fight next time. He is looking for that chin to be knocked out. And it was going to be Hendo, it's going to be Machida. New champion. Everyone loses in MMA.
I absolutely believe you're right. I just think that it's possibly a bit further down the line. I think that he's an awful student of the game. He's one of those really annoying bastards who just ends up studying and winning. And I think Greg Jackson's a dickhead. I hate him because I know how successful he is and he builds winners. I hate that.
The thing I don't like about Greg Jackson, he preaches his loyalty and stuff. He didn't show it to Rashad Evans.
Right? But business is business.
Didn't show to Guillard. Didn't show to yours truly. So, you know, he didn't show to Dana White. Anyone. I think the bigger Jackson has got, the more disrespectful he's become to the industry in a whole. That's what I'd look at. Because he came from nothing. If you've seen the whole UFC, the doc about Jackson's camp, Winkelmann, you know, there's clearly, you know, an uprising as well coming at revolving at the same time, and I think possibly, you know, Greg might, you know, come to regret some of the decisions he's made with some of his fighters.
Well, no, do you know why he might? Because I'm reading a tweet here currently from Nam Fan.
Oh,
a Nam Fan has called out John Jones and said that he is willing to challenge him at 151.
Shut up.
No,
it's a featherweight, man.
Come on, Niall. Do you think he couldn't? Nam Faminator couldn't take out the boneless Joneless?
And he's beaten Seagull, so.
Yeah, it's true. Steven Seagull.
So it wouldn't be too hard. Okay, moving on.
That got really angry, and that was me trying to break the ice. I was like, wow, yeah, fuck you.
We'll move on. We know everyone feels the fucking same way. And as well, guys, I'd just like to say to you, we're launching a competition in the next week or two before UFC Nottingham. And if you want to get involved in the competition, we'll put everyone's name in the competition. It's free. It's nothing. It costs you nothing to do. Just hashtag Talking Brawls on Twitter or join our Facebook page. And you have to follow our page as well to be in a chance of winning in the competition. We have two fucking awesome prizes. So I'm UFC Nottingham, just put it that way. Okay. And we will just leave it at that. And we're moving on swiftly and surely to UFC 150, Edgar versus Benson Henderson. I, as you know, Mark, was very fucked off yet again because, you know, I thought, I've mentioned the last podcast, you can go back and listen to it now. I'm not going to say what I said now. You can go back and listen if you want to. I said that Henderson, you know, that upkick that he landed on Edgar changed that fucking fight. And that's what I thought the judges perceived in that fight. And yet again, I thought Edgar won the fight. I'm not being biased. I like Frankie. Everyone likes Frankie, I think. But, you know, for a guy to walk around at his weight he's at and to fight at the weight he's at, unlike so many other UFC fighters, and to lose again, and I thought he took the fight, as you'll hear with Luke later on, you know, 3-2. I can't believe that he lost that fight. Mark, what the fuck, man? I don't know. He's moving out of featherweight now as well. It's been confirmed.
No, I think it's a sad day for mixed martial arts. I'm almost getting depressed in the sense that I feel like we've been making the same arguments for an overly long time. And I feel that he's a maverick of the sport and someone who is actually saying that I am going to fight at my weight and I don't care what anyone else is doing. It's something pure and it's something that it makes the sport real. It gives a bit of self-respect to the sport. And I think that just because he might have lost by decision on two very close fights, which I thought he won both of, to Henderson, I think to force him to move down a weight class is disparaging and almost quite crude to a fighter of such talent. as Frankie Edgar. I think the guy has got... He's got so much natural skill in him, and so much his speed might... This is something that everyone has been saying in the mixed martial arts community, that his speed is going to be cancelled out when he goes down. If he goes against Aldo, he'd be fucking killed. But the fact is that I think that he's... It's not even the Aldo fight. I don't think he should be forced to move down. I think that Dana White telling him that he should move down is... It's disparaging to his talent as a fighter.
Yeah, and I think as well, it's disencouraging to other guys that are, possibly thinking about moving down to featherweight. Because, Frankie, man, let's be honest, he fights at 155. He's got about 4 pounds. Everyone else in the fucking division would be in. Benson Henderson is about 175 as he walks around. Frankie walks around at 158, 59. Cuts 4 or 5 pounds for his fight. You know what I mean? It's a fucking joke. And I think more guys should go along. And this is what the fans want to see. Guys that suit the division in their division. And that's when we get the real fucking pound for pound fucking rankings at the end of the fucking day. So...
Until we see, like, we always hear that phrase, pound for pound. Yeah. We say pound for pound on fucking websites and shit, but all of a sudden then one guy actually says, I'm going to fight at my own weight, fuck it, the rest of you be done with you. I don't care.
Who is your pound for pound champion? I know who mine is. Frankie fucking Edgar, because he fights at his fucking weight.
But he's, to be honest, the only one I can think of that actually is just...
Pound for pound.
He could order a fucking pizza the night before and be grand, yeah.
You don't go into the butcher's and buy, like, 6 pounds of fucking mince for 6 pounds. It doesn't work like that. But it should work like that.
But do you think
Life is fucked up, man.
Do you think that there's anything to be said in the fact that he's moving from... Like, the fact is that there was lots of fights for him in that division. There might not have been title fights until Henderson lost the title, because you couldn't actually sell that fight, but there was fights for fights. It was going to be great. And when you move down there, what have you got? Like, you got the Mendez fight and you've got the Aldo fight, and that's it. It's barren wasteland. Nothing.
Rubbish. For a guy who's so talented like Frankie Edgar, it's fucking ridiculous.
You don't get respect in there if you're the boss of a fucking nothing division. And I don't think he could. Aldo's a big task for him still.
Yeah, it is, of course. Yeah,
I think he could be killed.
I don't think so at all. No, I completely disagree with that.
That's the thing. I think there's a chance he could be killed. I'm not sure. He's the only one in that division, or many divisions, that I feel has something that could actually counter his skills. Really,
yeah, definitely. But you look then, if he was to stay at the division, he's had so many good fights you can still put on with him. You've Joe Lowe's on, you've Gi. There's so many good fighters. And he's fought a lot of them as well. But there's so many, like, obviously when the WEC joined UFC, there was massive fights you could put together.
I was saying that to you during the week.
He hasn't fought half these guys that he could fight.
Yeah, I know. I was saying that to you during the week that I've been watching the WEC Classic matches during the week and watching that crew of talent.
She looked at Lowe's on Varner a couple of weeks ago there, but like, fuck me, man. That was like, oh, I said it'd be fighting that, but okay. I'm going
to
do that.
Should we go to an interview?
We probably should.
It's probably got to that point, we are two of the most interesting people that I know. Anyway.
Well, I am.
You're a complete cunt. I have to say this again. I have to make this entirely clear. You just have control of the fader.
Okay. We're going to fade you out. Well, Mark, what's your name? Hello? All right, Grant. Listen, guys, we caught up with Eddie Yeagan earlier on. Obviously, he's supposed to be on the card next weekend against Dennis Seaver at UFC 151 in Las Vegas. And obviously, we've heard from a very pissed off Eddie Yeagan and an absolutely top gentleman. So take a listen interview and we'll be back in a few minutes and chat to you then. Cheers, guys.
Boom.
This is Chad the Savage George and you're listening to Talking Brawl.
Okay, I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by Eddie Yeagan, who was supposed to be fighting Dennis Seaver next week at UFC 150 in Las Vegas. Obviously, mate, great to have you on the show, Eddie. How disappointed were you with the events of yesterday and what occurred in the end with the event being cancelled?
Very disappointed because, we trained, we had our camp, and, 8 days before the fight is usually when you're about to peak and you're ready to peak and you're ready to fight, and then, something like that happens. That's our life. It's almost like you're working hard every 2 weeks and then a week and a half, you find out, oh, you're not going to get your paycheck. You know, and it's like, well, I worked so hard these two weeks, and I don't get my paycheck.
It kind of
sucks, you know.
And Eddie, what's the feeling like in your head and your camp's head when it comes to something like this? Do you feel like you want to be ready to go? Do you drop everything and because you've peaked now, or do you want to keep? Can you keep going for a while longer and hope that Uncle Dana kind of puts the fight on a card pretty soon? And or do you want to be ready to go all the time now?
Well, I'm going to have to. You know, and it's nothing new to me. It's been like that for your whole MMA career. You just basically have to be ready all the time. But and UFC, you know, you finally get your opponent, and you know who you're going to fight months before you fight. So
yeah, it's a long process.
It's different because I'm, you know, as far as being with UFC. So far, everything's been really organized, and this is the first time it's been like this. So,
and how obviously Dennis Seaver was, you know, it's a big matchup for yourself and Dennis. Obviously, that would have been a great fight to have under your belt, especially if you taken the victory. How disappointing is it that fight to be put off after? Because it's a big fight in the division. It was third on the card on next Saturday night.
Well, it's just, I mean, I'm ready for him. I know we're going to fight, so I know my next fight's going to be him. I just don't know when. So to have a proper training camp, you have to, it's like an estimate of time and you know, how much you do within that amount of time. And I mean, with a diet you can control, but with peaking, making your body peak to a certain top performance of your body, it has to be timed perfectly.
And Eddie, I heard you talk in the past before saying that when you got really serious about mixed martial arts when you were 20, that you basically trained like an animal. You trained like 7 days a week, 6 hours a day. You were just a fighter. And it was only kind of later in your career that you really started thinking about the nutritional side and peaking at the right times. Has this, how is your camp been about building up to this fight?
Well, it's very important, so... Usually you start at 8 weeks. Well, 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
It depends. Everyone's different. And I usually go soft on my first 2 weeks. And then I hit it really, really hard. I mean, I hit it soft so that my muscles get back into what it's going to get into.
Yeah.
On the 6 week mark. Then I go really hard to where I have to ice bath every single night. You know, that's when... You know, I have to get deep tissues. I get ice baths. You know, I probably have to see a chiropractor. Maybe acupuncture. You know, just depends.
What age were you when you started taking it with the more kind of scientific approach to your training and started working on your recovery and on those elements more?
Actually, when it didn't hit me till I was 30.
Wow, yeah. These things
happen. Yeah, it didn't hit me until I was 30. When I was 20, you know, I didn't really have anybody really teach me the proper way. You know, I was just looking around and seeing what everybody else was doing, and it seemed like the right way was to just keep training your butt off. And the more you train, the better you're going to be in the ring. And throughout the years, seeing people, some not trained enough and some overtrained, way overtrained. And you could see the difference in the ring. I mean, obviously you could tell someone that didn't train enough, you know.
Yeah.
He's jiggling in the ring.
Yeah.
And he's gassing out. And then the guy that overtrained, he looks... In great shape, he looks in top peak performance, but then when he jumps in the ring, it's like, where is this guy from? We don't even know this guy. This guy has no technique. he's gassing out big time, and he's not doing anything he was doing in the gym, and that's overtraining.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed. You know? And Eddie, obviously, defining moments in, obviously, you said about your nutrition. As you've got older, you've taken on the advice of nutritionists and things like that. How defining was that, and how much of an experience was it beating Mark Hominick?
You know, it was a great feeling because actually Hominick knew who I was. I think we actually fought in the same event a long time ago in Hawaii.
Yeah.
I guess we were both coming up, and he ended up getting into UFC before me, and you know, he became a veteran and in the UFC, and I became a veteran outside of the UFC, and so before fighting him, he knew of me, and he knew it was going to be a war.
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to be a war.
Brilliant
and,
fight.
Me pulling out the victory, you know, meant a lot to me, and it made me feel like I finally get the recognition that I deserve after all these years of fighting.
Definitely, brother. It was an absolutely amazing fight, and congratulate you on that fight as well.
Eddie, was it pretty cool in a way in that fight? Because I remember in the build-up to that fight, people were almost building it up. They were building it up on the Hominick perspective, and they were almost overlooking you. And you were going into it, and I saw an interview with you before that fight where you said you were going in with such confidence, you've been trying new things, and your stand-up was going to destroy him. And did it feel really good to silence a lot of people and to put in probably one of the fights of the year, really just such a smash-and-bang performance? Did it make you feel good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you go back into my resume and if you'll notice that most of my fights I've been the underdog.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to hometowns and beat all the champions, and it became Fresno, they all hated me. You know, every time I was at a fight, they hated me. And when I fought Joe Soto, I don't know if you guys saw that fight on YouTube.
Yeah, I did.
If you notice at the end, a guy jumps on top of the cage and he's calling me out, and security had to pull him down, and that was Joe Soto's brother.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, these were these guys' hometowns. I mean,
do you secretly thrive off this?
Every day, you know, they're blowing him up like, oh, this is a hometown favorite, so-and-so. He's going to take on Eddie Yagan, da-da-da-da, and then I would beat these guys in 2 minutes or less. And they're like, who the hell is this guy? And after that Joe Soto fight, it was crazy because after that happened, they had to kick that guy out, but we don't know if he was on drugs or whatnot. But, you know, there's some ghetto areas in that area, so we didn't want to stick around and find out what could have happened if we wanted to stick around and hang out and party and whatever. So they escorted us out. There was 10 security guards and CHP.
No way.
California Highway Patrol. And they escorted us all over the casino to cash my check, to go up to my room. We packed all our stuff, and they escorted us all the way out. I felt like Mike Tyson. Like, they were escorting everywhere.
So it was a good night,
and then, I had my belt on, and they escorted us all the way out, and then CHP actually drove us all the way out to the freeway, and we left that same night. We didn't even stick around. We didn't stay for a couple hours. We just straight from the ring, we went to the hotel room, packed our stuff, down to the cage, cashed my check, and out to the freeway. It was
strange.
It was crazy.
Just your regular fight. Eddie,
our our celebration was at In-N-Out Burgers in the front there, drinking a 22-ounce and eating burgers at In-N-Out. It was funny.
As long as the beer in the house, alright.
Eddie, speaking of being the badass who no one likes in the ring at the moment, what's the feelings like towards John Jones making a move like this? Is there any major resentment towards him after having him get the card cancelled?
Honestly, I'm looking from a fighter's standpoint, and you know, a lot of people have been asking me, "Oh, am I mad at John Jones and whatnot?" But as a fighter, we respect our trainers.
Yeah.
And if our trainers believe and strongly believe in something, after all the months, or could be all the years of training with this guy, you trust him and you trust his opinion and you respect his opinion. So if he thinks that you shouldn't fight a certain fighter, you're going to listen to him. You're going to believe him. You're going to say, okay, I trust your opinion. I respect you. So let's do it.
We obviously know the old saying with the, you know, great leadership comes great responsibility, things like that. But John Jones, right, you know, obviously heading the light heavyweight division, and you know, being a role model for the UFC. Do you think it's disrespectful towards you guys who are trying to make a living? He's more thinking business terms, possibly. But I think the Chael Sonnen fight would have been a great, more business term for him. But what's your opinions on that?
You know, honestly, you know, me personally, I would have took it. You know, he's at a different tax bracket now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, if I was in that tax bracket, I would take fights, because that's the only way you're gonna make more money.
Yeah.
You know, you're at the peak level of your game, and it's like being Mayweather. You got to take every fight. You fight Pacquiao. You know what I mean? It's almost the same.
Yeah,
but you know, you can't get mad at the guy. You know, he probably trained months to get ready for one particular fighter.
Do you feel like that he's not being a team player to the UFC, and that it should actually be almost a team sport in supporting the fellow fighters out there? Do you think there's a liability on the fighter?
I think he's. I think he's just looking out for his best interest. You know. I don't think he's even thinking about he's not thinking about UFC, he's not thinking about anything at all. He's just thinking about his best interest. You know, he's thinking about staying the champion. He wants to be the champion, and he doesn't want to lose the title because someone decided to come in, or someone got hurt that he was supposed to fight, and then all of a sudden a replacement comes in and beats him for a title and shocks the world and gets all the fame, and that's what he's afraid of. That's all him. I mean, I can't really point my fingers at him. I know.
Fair enough.
He's just probably listening to his coach, you know. So I honestly, if I think people should get down on him, I think everybody should get down on his coach, because his coach is the one that made the decision.
Yeah.
And as a fighter, we respect our coaches.
Yeah.
Eddie, what's it like now that you're almost having to trying to stay on the treadmill while take a step to the side, but at the same time and still be ready for the fight? How are you going to keep your body in shape? Are you going to take a few days now and just chill and have some ice cream and relax?
Actually, I am first day. When I woke up, because, you know, people were blowing up my phone, and I was still asleep, and they woke me up with the news, and I found out for sure. And the first thing I did was eat dishes.
What did you go for?
That I could. Well, I'm Filipino. I don't know if you guys know anything about Filipino food. Do you guys know anything?
Bits and bobs.
It's this dish called chicken adobo. You eat it with rice, white rice.
No,
and it's just meat and chicken.
Oh yeah, sounds good.
And I love it. So, that's the first thing I ate. Actually, I cooked it for my family, and I cook for my coaches sometimes.
Do you? Cool.
So, yeah. So I.
What's, I'm sure John Jones will be cooking for Greg Jackson tonight. After that, and Eddie.
Hopefully, they'll both have all their clothes on.
We got it here. I tell you,
Eddie. Right, we'll wrap it up now. Eddie, what are you going to achieve in the next year and a half of your career? What's going to happen to Eddie Hagen?
You know, I don't like to plan ahead, because I go with the punches and I go with the flow, and I let it ride. Whatever happens, happens. And I don't like to set myself up with disappointment, or I don't like to get myself too eager. So, you know, my first goal is to beat Seaver.
Yeah.
And from there, I fight the next top opponent, you know, if everything goes the way I want it to go.
And Eddie, you know, when would you like to see that fight? Sooner rather than later?
I want it to be next week.
They should put you on the Nottingham card. Would you like to fight over this side of the pond? In Nottingham, the UK?
I would love to. I've never been there before, but I'd love to go.
Ireland's better, by the way.
Than Nottingham.
I'll fight anywhere.
Brilliant,
you know,
stuff.
Wherever they put us, I'll fight anywhere.
Excellent. So, Eddie, thanks so much for your time and coming on the show.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
And that was Eddie Egan, who was meant to face off against Dennis Eaver next weekend at UFC 151 in Las Vegas. But obviously, John Jones has changed that shit. And what do you reckon, Mark? We'll just sum it up in one. I couldn't be fucking even arsehole in bed. I'm so pissed off. I can't even do arsehole in bed anymore.
Well, dude, he probably has something else to do on the night. Like, you know, it's a Saturday night. Like, you know, lots of people have other plans. He could be going to the movies or something, as Chael said. Like, you know, it's tricky, you know.
But I think Nike's slogan is just do it, not don't do it. Is that correct?
Well, that's tricky now, you know. Nike, just, he might be jumping on the bandwagon. But I think the best one was since Vitor Belfort is now the new number one contender, which I woke up about 6...
Is that confirmed? Is
Machida
off, or what's?
Of course, yeah, he's Machida has actually said that he's definitely not. He's not fighting him.
But I thought it was confirmed. 152 would be Machida, and
No. Machida has stepped down from his position, and Vitor Belfort is the new number one contender, and he's facing him at 152
for light heavyweight crowds.
Yeah.
But Belfort was fighting a middleweight a few months ago.
Well, this is it. He's the only one who basically said that I am willing to take that fight on that notice.
Was it not announced in the press call yesterday, no?
Yeah, but this is what happens. It was this morning. At 6... At 6... This is what I've been fucking saying to you.
I've been out of the loop.
At 6:30 this morning, I woke up to this tweet. The fact that Machida had pulled out and resigned from his position. And he said he's not going to face him on the 4 weeks notice or whatever it is.
That fight won't sell.
But that's it. And now, of course, Dana White has stated the fact that if Machida's pulled out now, he's going to have to fight someone else, another big contender, to win back his number one contender spot.
Michael Bisping, step up to the mark.
Well, this... Do you think?
Jump up to 205. Why not?
Like, he's still, like, you know, a Bisping Weidman match after he...
Well, he beat Chael Sonnen, but he didn't get decisions.
But that's the truth.
It's for another day.
I thought the best one was, though, I've just read a tweet from... I heard earlier Chael Sonnen on ESPN Radio said he thinks that Vitor Belfort will pull out of UFC 152 because he always pulls out of fights. And he thinks he'll be the man to fight John Jones at UFC 152 in Toronto. What a legend.
there's been some fucking crazy quotes this week, and obviously we won't get into them with Dana White's ones. You can just take a listen to that on YouTube about Greg Jackson. Ed Suarez just tweeted there as well.
I think that
happy to get 10,000 followers. Oh, you should be worried about your fighter and the state his financial situation is going to be in the next 2 months.
But what do you think, Noel? That, like, do you think it's a completely Ed Suarez move by, like, did you genuinely not know about Machida pulling out? Because, like,
No, I didn't.
Because I think that that's a complete Suarez move, overvaluing his position in the fight against Jones and thinking that him pulling him on the last minute was a massive deal to him, not realising that John Jones actually didn't want him in the first place. And
Mark, I don't know, we've tried to get Ed on the show before and he's declined, so you know, once you don't talk to a guy, you don't really know what he's talking about. So obviously
it's true. if you're not coming on Talking Brawls, who the fuck are you anyway? You might say.
We're not that.
Strong. Yeah, sorry. Yes, we fucking are.
No, we're not.
Huh?
Hey, Mark is, I'm not.
Oh, sorry. What a cunt.
No, listen, yeah, you're right. Like, I don't know, man. It's a fucked up situation. I think Jones, if you're a fighter, you're a fighter. At the end of the day, there's this, you know, sort of moral dignity and once you're a champion of a big organisation, you have to hold a certain level and represent the other guys in your division, I think, to a certain extent. And he didn't fucking do that. He let down 16 other guys. That's why I'd be pissed off. He hasn't thought about anyone else but himself. I know you have to be a champion sometimes, single-minded, but fuck me, man. 8 days notice.
Do you know, there's something which
kind of... Fight, Chael, fucking son.
But that's the thing, that, like, he's, you know, a fucking... He would have won anyway. Then. The guy hasn't trained. He's out of shape. He has no training time.
And Chael Sonnen gets pushed back now. He's obviously... His fight, next fight's going to be against Forrest Griffin at 205. Exactly. He's giving up.
And then the next one, he has 90 days to prepare for. You know, kind of. Yeah. So it's going to be grand. But as well, there's something to be said for, like, you know, we've just sat through the Olympics and we've seen all these great athletes going through, kind of, you know, and it was amazing. It was beautiful. But you know, kind of, when you see all those great athletes competing at the highest level for little to no money, and then you see something like John Jones coming out and kind of throwing the toys out of the pram and saying, I don't want to fight this guy on this day, you know, kind of, I haven't prepared for him, I haven't had 3 weeks to study the tapes. And, like, when you see that, the general public, I can actually, I think you can, if you twisted your head and didn't hate Greg Jackson so much. I'm joking. No, I think that we can kind of see there is a point to the concept that he didn't want to take the fight, but the need to take the fight is another question.
No.
He should feel the need to take the fight
for
everything that fighters stand for.
Everything that Belt stands for.
Exactly. He's representing the company. He should be representing the fighters and the guys who are sleeping on floors and kind of trying to make, like, to actually pay for their training.
We can say this all we want, but he fucking didn't.
Yeah, it's true.
Simple as that. That he fucking did. That's the whole.
No, I try really hard to play devil's advocate here. You know, because sometimes I get it wrong. You know,
facts are facts.
Yeah, sometimes John Jones was just a complete prick.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yes, sir.
Possibly, but
we kind of have a bit pulling back the curtain, like, you know, once or twice today.
But listen, and we caught up obviously with Luke Thomas today of SBN Nation and
MMAfighting.com.
So here's what Luke to say about the week in mixed martial arts and what's going to go down at UFC 152 and 1FC.
No, 1FC.
So take it away, Mark.
Boom.
This is Eddie Yagan. You're listening to Talk and Brawl.
Okay, I'm glad to say we're joined on the line by Luke Thomas of SB Nation and MMAfighting.com. Luke, obviously, with last night's sort of debacle announcement from Dana White at the UFC 151 press conference call, what's the general reaction in the States, and what a disappointing moment for mixed martial arts and especially UFC?
It's split. There are sort of two sides to the debate. I don't know that they're... And they're both with merit. So the two sides are, one, the side that the UFC put forward, namely that John Jones could have taken a fight against a middleweight who hasn't been training and needed to do so to save an event. And if you look at the card, there was really no other way to move forward on it without a suitable main event like that, and that John Jones refused to do so. As a consequence, for the first time in company history, they had to cancel the card. However, there is the other side of the debate, which is equally important to note, and namely that John Jones is contractually well within his rights to do so, that they believed taking a fight on 3 days' notice, because they mentioned that the last 5 days are just PR, and as somebody who's covered this sport a long time, that's a hard statement to dispute. And more importantly, that the UFC is running so many shows at this point unnecessarily that they don't have the resources to back this up. And you'll recall that, you know, main events have fallen out before, and they've been replaced. This is the first time that a main event has fallen out, and they simply could not find a way to get other talent. Other light heavyweights were used at the last Fox show. There's already guys lined up for 152 and 153, and this ridiculous burnout schedule, you know, they basically asked John Jones to bail them out, and it wasn't in his interest to do so, and so he didn't.
Luke, how do you feel when you see someone like... Because Jones's camp is obviously looking... They're trying to build him as a Tiger Woods-like super sports star in America who's going to be the guy who's going to be crossing over to mainstream culture. Do you feel that they're making a wrong move on the PR frontier and they're crossing all the wires with the public and they're screwing over the MMA fans, the hardcore fans, and people are starting to hate him too much now and they won't be able to... Jones won't win them back.
Not really. John Jones, well, certainly, let's be clear. I mean, John Jones is hated more now than ever.
Yeah.
There's no dispute about it. I'm not sure what the Irish MMA fans are saying, but I can assure you in America, he is being widely ridiculed.
Yes, yeah, same in Europe.
And
so.
Just killed. And if you want to do yourself a favor, go on Twitter and look at the at mentions to his Twitter account. It is shocking what you will see.
Yeah.
Although, surprisingly, nothing too racist, so I was happy to see that.
Yeah.
No, but whatever. But here's the point. I don't think this is bad for his career at all. Now, certainly, it's not the best of all worlds, right? I mean, the best of all worlds would be like George St. Pierre, where management loves you, women love you, guys want to be you, and you're a notable draw, and you're an icon, and all those things.
It can't all be me.
But I don't really feel like that was ever in the cards for John Jones anyway. I feel like this is the crystallization of a process he was already on. And more importantly, listen, I don't know how tickets are going to sell for John Jones versus Vitor Belfort.
Yeah.
But you got to be kidding me if someone says to you, well, I just don't want to see John Jones fight. That's nonsense. People want to see John Jones lose. They want to see John Jones get badly knocked out. He is as big a draw today as he was yesterday. The complexion of that draw has changed, but the might of it is firmly intact.
And do you feel that Dana White, in coming out, riling against him, whereas some people might say that the head of an organization such as the UFC, coming out and in 4 weeks' time, he does have to sell a fight with him. Do you think that maybe marketing him as the guy that everyone loves to hate might be the way forward for John Jones, or do you think that that's something that his camp would just never stand by?
I definitely think it's the right... It's the real approach. John Jones is weird, you know. I've met the guy in person many times. I've interviewed him many times, and I interviewed him one time in a hotel room when he came. I live in Washington D.C., and he was here for like a PR tour. And John Jones is interesting. Like the polarization that you see widespread, right? You can feel it when you meet him. On the one hand, for a moment, he is warm, gracious, friendly, jovial. And then the next minute, something will come out of his mouth that will make you want to smack him. I don't mean that literally, of course, but
yeah.
You know what I mean. Like you're dumbfounded. Why would you ever say or believe something like that? He naturally does that kind of thing, and I feel like having a role where he is marketed as the guy you love to hate, the guy you desperately want to see lose, matches up perfectly well with his ability as a ridiculously good fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And as one, that will be hard to fulfill in light heavyweight where he's about to clean it out, but it'll make moving to heavyweight even more interesting. You know, consider, right? You have John Jones, a guy who people can't stand. Now they say, well, hey, let's move him to heavyweight. Let's get a guy everybody loves in Junior Dos Santos, good versus bad. It's intriguing for its storyline. It's intriguing because of the way in which the fighters themselves match up stylistically. So I think that really, I'm sure that people aren't loving John Jones too much in Las Vegas in terms of the people at the Zuffa offices. But this is, you know, the interesting thing about the fight game, I always remember this, is that there's a certain nihilism to everything, which by that I mean,
nihilism.
Is a guy liked, market it. Is a guy hated, market it. Is the guy weird and have eccentric look and feel, market it. There's always a way almost
something.
To market somebody, no matter if they're loved, hated, or sort of people are curious about them.
Definitely.
And Luke, as someone who's kind of interviewed him up close, do you think it's just him or is it just crap management? Is it just crap PR dealings?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. I am less than impressed with the response he put out yesterday, and this has been a continuing problem. You'll note that when he was busted for DUI, they waited and waited and waited for some response to come out, and it was this tepid nonsense.
It seems overthought and contrived.
Super contrived. Yeah, but the thing is, I'm not even worried about it being contrived. Like, every athlete is contrived, at least to be timely.
Yeah.
And the other problem was, he actually went out on Facebook, now not as a message to like everyone who likes his page,
yes,
but to people who were actually friends with his profile, so probably people who knew him when he was coming up before he was super popular. And in it, he expressed, you know, rage at his critics. It's like, you were the one putting people's lives in danger.
Yeah.
So in other words, listen, in college, I did a lot of stupid things, too. I'm not in here to say I'm a morally superior person. But at 24, and the greatest fighter alive, arguably, he should have people in PR positions that can corral him a little bit better. Although I have heard behind the scenes, you know, I don't know if you guys noticed this or not, John Fuller, who was his PR guy, stopped representing him this week.
Okay.
And it is believed, I haven't spoken to John, but it is believed in the community that John Fuller fired John Jones as his client because he couldn't deal with him anymore.
The only thing I'd be worried about possibly if John, you know, because things seem to be spiraling a little bit out of control from at the moment, and he goes down the wrong roads altogether, it'd be a very sad thing to see. But how much of a sad day was it for MMA, the fact the show was cancelled? And, you know, I don't think John really, you know, he respected his peers as much. That's the main thing I think people are really pissed off about. The guys in the undercard, you know, like, they're going to obviously suffer, Luke. So what do we say about that? Is it a sad day for mixed martial arts?
It is and it isn't. You know, there's no denying that a guy like Jeff Hugland, you know, he mentioned he actually tweeted to John Jones. I don't know if you guys saw this. He tweeted, "Hey, John, can I have one of your Nike shirts? At least then my daughter can have something to wear for school."
Jesus Christ.
You know?
But
here's the reality. Like, did they thank John Jones when they booked their fight? John, the event was not called John Jones 151.
Yeah.
It was called UFC 151. John Jones didn't cancel it. UFC canceled it. Now, obviously, John Jones put them in a difficult position. There's no denying that. I certainly have genuine heartfelt sympathy for the guys who were counting on paychecks and didn't get it. There's no way to say it. They're in a tough spot. However, I need to be clear about this. I can't sit here and say that there aren't any good things either. First of all, my understanding is that event had only sold 5,000 tickets. That's not a lot.
Jesus.
Secondly, 152 is now infinitely better, as is the other FX cards that are surrounding it, because they have better talent on them now. And on top of that, by the time 152 comes around, people will be thirsty to see the fight. They'll have had plenty of time to build it up. And it's really going to be, I think, a gangbusters kind of show. Again, I'm not saying that's the biggest positive in the world, but this idea that it's universally bad, I just don't think is true.
Luke, a few weeks ago during the Olympics, you grabbed a few moments of Chael Sonnen's time to talk about the Olympic wrestling team. Did you see the grand plan that was in his head coming to the forefront? Because what a rise since then. It's the master plan has worked to perfection.
It's sort of amazing, isn't it? Up until like 48 hours ago, John Jones was going to fight Dan Henderson. 48 hours later, Chael Sonnen is all over American television killing this guy. It's incredible. It's incredible. And the funny part about it is, he took that fight because he has nothing to lose. I mean, he just lost against Anderson Silva, and now he gets to go fight the other best guy on the planet. I mean, why say no? I mean, let's be serious about that.
Do you think
What I would say is quickly about it is that Chael Sonnen certainly, you know, listen, not everyone can do what he does. I mean, people at MMA often recommend, why can't other fighters be like Chael Sonnen? It's sort of like saying, hey, Luke Thomas, why don't you run like Usain Bolt? The guy has a unique skill set and a unique ability to manipulate other fighters and himself into lucrative situations, and it's the American dream, baby.
I think the best one is when you see someone like John Jones actually tweeting, I will not play his game. And he's been suckered into it. It's just amazing.
I know. He's like, he's literally moving the pieces of the chess. He's like, I'm not going to play Kasparov.
And Luke, do you think possibly it might have been premeditated from Chael Sonnen to tweet John Jones quite a lot? Because there was obviously whispers going around that, Hendo was injured in some way.
Yeah, there was rumors floating around that Hendo, first of all, his coach confirmed he was injured 3 weeks ago. Now, they thought they could make it work and move along. Obviously, that's not the case, as he had to pull out. But the theory is that Henderson was in contact with Sonnen. Sonnen knew there was a chance he would pull out and began to tweet him and run his mouth about him and promote him. And it's certainly a plausible theory. I tried to talk to Chael yesterday, and when I spoke with him after news broke, I mean, this was like right after the press conference. He said he was on a gag order. I haven't had a chance to speak to him again, but I am certainly going to get to the bottom of that.
And moving on, we haven't here on our pod, we haven't talked a lot about UFC 150, Frankie Edgar versus Benson Henderson. We were, and especially myself here in the studio, Niall, speaking to here, Luke, I thought the fact, you know, I actually believe Frankie Edgar won that fight, and I think there's a lot of talk, you know, in the media in the States especially, that, you know, it could have gone either way. But I thought Frankie might have took three of those rounds pretty convincingly. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, I thought he won that fight. I gave him rounds two, four, and five.
Four and five, I think.
And
that
I thought
it, yeah.
Henderson won round one, and I think round three I had it 10-10, because basically nothing happened in terms of a major differential. You know, here's the thing about it, though. Like, do I think Frankie Edgar won? Yes.
Yeah.
Did the judges get it wrong in my mind? Yes. However, if you look at every other champion, including Dominic Cruz, they don't live on the margin that way. You know, everybody else, and Dominic Cruz doesn't blow guys out, but he pretty clearly and, you know, uncontroversially beats them.
Yeah.
Frankie Edgar is in rematch after rematch after rematch after rematch. And yes, he finally put away Maynard at the end there. But the reality is, first of all, I think people saying, well, 145, he'll lose all the advantages he has. We don't know that. That's just conjecture. Nobody really knows.
Yeah.
And secondly, if you want to fight in MMA's most competitive weight class, because I think 155 is the most competitive,
definitely. Mm-hmm.
And you want to be champion, and you can't put away guys, and you are constantly living on the margin. Not to say he's not a good fighter; he's a great fighter, but he fights his contenders on the margin. And you also live in a world where, you know, judging is not going to get better overnight. This is what you're going to get. He didn't deserve to lose, but this is the inevitable consequence of not being dominant enough in an era of poor officiating, and we can't fix it overnight. He's got to figure out something else.
And Luke, where does Frankie go from here? Obviously, he's confirmed that he's dropping down to 145. Who's a potential lineup before he obviously gets his shot at Jose Aldo? Does he have to fight one of the guys like Chad Mendes, possibly?
Yeah, he should, and for two reasons. One, you know, he should see what it's like to fight at 145. I mean, every guy is different at 145, but I just mean cutting the weight, going through a camp, managing everything, you know, making sure that he can go through a 145 camp, and so that the time he actually fights for the title, he maybe can correct an error or two he makes in his previous camp. Because I don't want Frankie Edgar to fight Jose Aldo unless he's the best Frankie Edgar ever. I don't want Frankie Edgar to fight Jose Aldo after a bad weight cut. I mean, it's only 10 pounds, but you know what I mean. Like, I want every, you know, all the P's and Q's minded. But here's what I would like, and I mean, there's a lot of good options for him. But for me, I think Frankie Edgar versus the Korean Zombie, Chan Sung-jae, would be awesome.
Yeah,
it'd be awesome. And for a variety of reasons, I mean, I hear the reaction from you guys. First of all, I mean, those two are just going to put on a sensational scrap. But beyond that, you got Frankie Edgar who can go down there and be close to a title shot, and you've got Korean Zombie coming off that Dustin Poirier win. But that Dustin Poirier win, recall, that was in my backyard in Virginia. Now, I live in D.C., but it's, you know, 30 minutes from my house. Yeah. That event, it was on Fuel. And Fuel in America has a lot of great programming, but it's seen by almost nobody.
Yeah, it's hard to find.
For me, put Edgar versus Korean Zombie on a big show, maybe co-main event or whatever, but put it on a big show, and then the winner of that gets Aldo. To me, that is a can't-miss opportunity.
Luke, if you put that in a Fox card, do you think it would do well, since Edgar's hasn't done great on the pay-per-view numbers in the past?
Here's the thing. If you're not going to draw on pay-per-view, you may not draw that well on TV.
Yeah,
either.
Fair enough.
But what I would say is it's still a good fit for Fox, just not as a headliner. And the reason why is pretty obvious, right? Like, if you go and you say, hey, these two guys fight, winner gets a title shot, that's intriguing to people, and you are guaranteed to get action. Guaranteed. If there are two guys in MMA who you know are going to go, you know, Edgar doesn't go necessarily, doesn't finish guys, but we'll see how much his punching power gets better at 145. And Korean Zombie, you know, I mean, his nickname and his reputation speaks for itself. I think I wouldn't put that as the headlining role, but, you know, that is a, I mean, what card do you put that on, and the card sucks? I mean, that's just a great fight.
No, Luke, definitely agree. Luke, just moving on to the before Chael-a-mania kicked off, we had Rousey and that Strikeforce card with Tate fighting on it as well. Was that really Rousey confirming her status as one of the top five big names in mixed martial arts today?
Top five. That's tough for me to say. I would say, well, yeah, I mean...
I say names.
You've got Silva, GSP, Jones. Yeah, maybe. Maybe she is, you know. I haven't thought of it that way, but that's certainly a decent... there's a decent argument to be made there. I mean, here's what I can say. She's clearly the next... I mean, John Jones is the next big thing in MMA, but she's right there, right behind him. She's not too far away. And, you know, what's so amazing about her is... You know, it's not that she's just, you know, everyone's like, oh, she's beating all these girls by first round armbar. Isn't that amazing? It's like, that is amazing. But what's, in my judgment, super amazing about it is she is just, I made this point last week. Rick Hahn was not the competitor in judo that she was, right? I mean, he took ninth at the 2004 Sydney Games. You know, he won national titles in the Pan Am Games, but he didn't succeed at the highest level like she did. So she's better in that sense. But imagine if Rick Hahn were in the UFC and just bulldozing guys, like the best guys in the world, and doing it like in a way that was almost comical. It would you would say to yourself, I have to rethink what it is I think about mixed martial arts. That's what she's doing to women's MMA. She is simply, you know, she's a cyborg from the year 2050 that sent back in time to snatch your arm. It's kind of incredible.
Do you think
and
she's that
she
good?
She marries that with, I don't think she's some sort of beauty queen, but marries that with a marketable look, I would say, and a general salesmanship that the reason why it works is because it's not forced. She knows she has the ability and she leverages it, but it's organic. And man, how often do you find somebody who can do that, men or women?
And Luke, when you saw the All Access special on Showtime, which I thought was one of the best things Showtime has ever done for mixed martial arts anyway, did you think it was just almost a lesson for John Jones and just the calmness and the naturalness in front of the camera that she shows? And she just knows how to play up and build a fight. And she can come across sometimes dislikable almost if she's almost a bit overbearing the more you see of her. But Christ, she can talk. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, people were talking about that before the fight. They were saying, well, there's too much of her right now. I'm kind of sick of her. And then, of course, she snatches Kaufman's arm and everyone loves it.
Yeah.
But there is a point to be made there. Like, was there too much exposure? Veteran MMA journalist, a man whose opinion I respect to a very strong degree, Dave Meltzer, he was worried about that a little bit. And I don't think that he's wrong. I don't think that anybody who was a little fatigued with her was wrong. But my point about it is, first of all, who else was going to promote that show in the U.S.? I mean, they had nobody else. You know, send Jacare around? Like, that doesn't work. Mm. She was really the only buddy of any magnitude that people cared about. And the ratings proved that, by the way. And on top of that, you know, yes, I acknowledge there could have been some fatigue. However, my feeling about that is if she takes a break now and she keeps winning in the dominant way that she is, interest in her will not wane. There is appetite for what she can do, particularly in that cyborg fight, if they can make it. Seems unlikely, but we'll see. But the overexposure, it wasn't past the tipping point. It was, all right, guys, I've had enough. They gave you the fight. She won easily. And now so the MMA world, you can see, has moved on again. So, you know, she takes up the lion's share of people's attention in women's MMA, but it's just inevitable, and I really don't think it will impact her trajectory as she becomes a bigger and bigger star.
Is it a play, or is it a master plan to get that cyborg fight? To get the weight class?
Here's what I would say. If Strikeforce or Zuffa or UFC doesn't do it, I mean, if they try their best, they just can't make it happen, that's one thing. But if they don't seriously seek it, you know, that's just promotional malpractice. I mean, you're talking about the biggest fight in women's history. You're talking about a huge payday for everybody involved, promoter and fighters alike. You're talking about, if you want to make it in the UFC, you know, a historical moment in sports, there is every incentive to make that fight if you can make that fight. And with Rousey actually telling ESPN UK today that, you know, she would fight Cyborg if someone told her she had 40 minutes to get downtown and put duct tape on her hand. You know, we'll see about that. But I feel like, you know, again, if you can't make it because people don't want to do it, then there's nothing you can do. But if there's any inkling between both parties, this fight has to be made.
And Luke, who is her biggest challenge? Is it Cyborg or is it Misha Tate? Because Misha Tate, as much as she wasn't happy with her performance last time out, last weekend against Kedzie, I thought she was quite impressive and showed resilience, and I thought she made a bit of a statement as well with the armbar. No?
Yeah, she's impressive, but again, she's not on the same level. I mean, it sounds bad, but like, she's ultra tough. She's ultra good. She's world class. I mean, let's just be clear about the term. Misha Tate is a world class fighter. But, you know, relative to Ronda Rousey, she might as well not be because it doesn't really matter. Eventually Ronda Rousey's probably going to lose. Everyone loses in MMA, right? You know, she's going to catch a punch. I have not been impressed with Rousey's striking defense, but it hasn't really mattered because no one's been able to exploit it. But that's sort of where Cyborg comes into play. Like, Cyborg's physicality and, you know, as good as judo is, as good as Ronda is at judo and throws and trips, you know, just dealing with a physical brick like that is a slightly different challenge, particularly when they're proactive in their offense and particularly when that proactive offense is potent. And it's potent. So, again, you know, if people want to favor Rousey to beat Cyborg, that's fine. But if we're asking who her toughest challenge is, I can't imagine it's anybody but her.
And, moving on, sorry, Luke. Back to UFC in Denver there, UFC 150. Cerrone and Guillard, it just came up in my mind there. The fact Greg Jackson again was in the corner and, you know, Guillard sort of left the camp and Evans has left the camp. Do you reckon there could be a bit of turmoil down in Jackson's at the moment?
No, not really. I mean, Melvin had mostly already left for Black Zillions and had nothing but praise for that team that whole week. Cerrone had mostly spent a camp outside of it. And honestly, at this point, you know, I'm not sure, I don't know that they're all best friends and high-fiving and whatever, but at this point, I mean, Greg Jackson's got a lot bigger fish to fry. I don't know if you guys know that expression, but
we do.
I don't know. I don't know which ones are transnational. I don't know. But long story short, you know, he's got much bigger problems to address. It's, you know, whether or not Melvin Guillard is happy, it seems to be the least of his concerns. I mean, the guy was told by the most powerful person, I should say, in this sport, in any country, in the Milky Way, that he is a sport killer. Now, I don't know what kind of effect that'll have on his business. Probably none. But, you know, by the way, Julie Kedzie, a Greg Jackson fighter, seems to be pretty exciting to me. Nevertheless, that, you know, he's at... This is a bad place to be if you're Greg Jackson.
How does he get out of this mire? And like, they always seem to be vaguely affable towards each other and almost ignore any tensions. But like, I think the gods have been trying to bring Dana White down over the last few days. Like, the guy never sleeps. He lives out of hotel rooms and he's been working nonstop for about a squillion years now. How does this continue in this way and without an explosion coming to pass?
It doesn't, you know, I mean, ultimately at some point, you know, you just have to sort of realize, you know, I can't have an industry where everybody I want to work with is there. And, you know, particularly when it's managers or agents or other people of, you know, less than reputable reputations, Greg Jackson's a trainer, but you know what I mean? Like that is the kind of, all those circles kind of blend together when you see a fight camp travel from city to city. But with Jackson, I mean, I here's a general thing I would say. First of all, I don't agree with Jackson's assessment. Let me be clear about that when it comes to John Jones. I defend John Jones's right to make the choice that he did. But, you know, if I were Jackson, would I have recommended that to John Jones? I would not. I would have recommended that he fight. I think he could have. I don't think it's overly risky to fight an out-of-shape Chael Sonnen on 3 days' notice.
Here.
And he would have gotten a lot of fans, been a hero in the company, and kept his belt. I think that is that to me seems like a worthwhile cause. It didn't to Greg Jackson, and Greg Jackson, mind you, his concern is not whether the event will be canceled. He can't worry about that. His concern is not whether fans will hate him. His concern is my fighter prepared for this challenge? Mm. That's it. That's all he worries about. And that's all he's supposed to worry about. He's not supposed to worry about everything
else. It's the mechanics.
So I think his recommendation there, well, I don't agree with it. I don't think it's out of bounds for him to say what he has said. And my point is, to wrap this all up, Dana White just, you know, and UFC generally, they, listen, they don't have necessarily the best relationships with managers. I'm not saying that all of them are poisonous, but there just is a history of managers and UFC colliding, you know, and that's inevitable, right? Like, managers are going to have different interests than what the UFC is. And in the sense that Jackson's influenced a management decision, they're going to be at loggerheads.
Luke, just finishing up, 5 years' time, do you think that Dana White's still going to be the face of the UFC? And that this sort of, because you don't see it in baseball or any other mainstream sport, when the head of the company, the head of the promotion, is the guy who's out on Twitter slating the fighter who's irrelevant to the fact I agree with his slating of Jackson and the Jones scenario. I think he still has to promote his fight in 4 weeks' time. Do you think that in 5 years' time he's still going to be there, or they're going to have someone more faceless in fronting the company?
I that's a great question, and the answer is I don't know. Here's what I guess. Dana White said this past year that he was supposed to be out in 7 years, that there was a seven-year plan that they had in mind, and after that he was going to go on his merry way. I don't know if that's true or not. I have the hunch he's going to be here for a long time,
yeah.
Or he could be out of here in 2 years. I mean, the guy's health, you know, he always says, I don't get jet lagged. I mean,
he looks like he's
sort
going
of like
to
saying,
die.
When I get cut by a machete, I don't bleed. Of course you do. You know what I mean? Like, you may ignore it because you're tough, right? You know, oh, that punch doesn't hurt. I mean, it's still hurting your body, whether you want to acknowledge it or not. And the guy's health, I mean, doesn't look good, you know. I mean, his health is deteriorating, and it's inevitable because of the work schedule. But I don't know how long he's going to be around. But here's what my guess is. My guess is it will be something like Apple. And by that, I mean Steve Jobs is gone.
Yeah.
And there is nobody to replace Steve Jobs. However, if you read about what people at Apple think and say, they say that Jobs' way of life and his thinking, it permeated everything at the company, and it created a certain amount of expectations and values and traditions.
Hmm.
And, you know, I'm sure they won't all be preserved in the way that Jobs would have intended, but he so deeply affected the identity of the organization that much of what he wanted out of it continues on in his absence. I don't know when Dana White goes away, but I know that when he goes away, the organization will be that way. The traditions, the values, and the expectations that he had placed on himself and everyone else, that will be carried through every employee and in the way they conduct business.
Mm. Absolutely brilliant.
Deadly.
Just wrapping it up, Luke, obviously we won FC next weekend. We've Jens Pulver against Eric Kelly and Arlovski versus Tim Sylvia, number four. How can you see those fights going, and what do you think of 1FC as a promotion itself in Malaysia?
1FC I'm interested in. I'm not a huge believer in them, but I don't mean that as a derogatory way. Yeah. I just mean, you know, you've got to do big things before I can heap big praise. Mm-hmm. And they're well on their way, obviously, but they also have a long way to go.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. I think everyone is excited about the center of the Asian MMA world shifting out of Japan and moving into parts of Malaysia and the Philippines and so forth. And I am too, but, you know, we have to manage our expectations. You know, Andrei Arlovski said he was super happy to fight Tim Sylvia. As a guy who was at two of those fights, I can tell you that I was not happy.
Fair enough.
And I went to the first one and then the third one. And the first one was kind of cool, but I didn't know much about the sport. And the third one was just dreadful. here's what I would say. I mean, I don't know what these two guys have left anymore. Arlovski, you know, I frankly don't know what to expect. When guys are past their prime, and they know each other really well, I wonder if they could be exciting for a short time and then something goes badly wrong for one of them. So I don't expect it to be as boring because they don't have as much to lose.
Yeah.
But I nevertheless don't expect a barn burner. And Jens Pulver, listen, it's very easy for me to sit here and say, you should retire, Jens Pulver.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to be in Jens Pulver's shoes and think about his life and the things he has to do.
Mm.
But, you know, he's in danger. I mean, let's just be real about the terms here. He's endangering his health.
and I don't think he should fight. I understand he's probably in a difficult financial predicament. He has been open about the fact that he needs to fight for money, which is unfortunate. But, you know, I don't see him as a particularly competitive entity, even if he still has some name value and even if he's still helpful for the ONE FC brand. Not saying he won't win, but I'm always suspect whenever he steps in the cage.
Luke, listen, it's absolutely been fantastic to have you on. I really appreciate your time. Thanks, mate. Hope to talk to you again in the future.
Thanks so much, Luke. You're a legend.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Cheers. So much. Thanks, bro. And that was Luke Thomas of SB Nation and MMAfighting.com. Some fucking interesting comments from Luke there. You know, crazy times in the UFC at the moment. This year's just been wild, I think. We can just leave it at that. And Mark, anything else to sum up to what Luke and me just asked me?
But I think it represents pretty well what's been a pretty crazy last 48 hours in MMA and a crazy little period that's went on. No kind of time.
As well, I would urge people to watch ONE FC. Obviously, it's not your lead soccer hicks. There's different rules in ONE FC at the moment. And just see Jens again. Give Jens support. You know, he's one of the you know, pioneers of the sport and first ever UFC lightweight champion. So, you know, try and find that fight on somewhere and watch it because Jens is...
I think the promotion's doing well as well. I think it really is. It's one of the few... I usually say that promotions trying to challenge UFC, they don't have a hope in hell. But I think they're taking on the right sort of talent. They're taking on local talent and they're also taking on talent which is... possibly, you know, kind of a bit past it, or just big names, big names which are known.
Get themselves up there, you know.
And that's kind of how you build a startup promotion. That's how you have to do
it. You have to start from the bottom, and they're getting.
You got to respect them.
If you look at their Facebook page, they've 160,000 followers. So.
And what was that thing you said? They want to sign everyone to. Was it a 6-fight deal or a 3-fight deal? They will only sign you.
So the Hulk Paletti, the guy he's been talking about, the UFC making a heavyweight fight, they wanted him to sign to a 5-fight deal. That's when he left. He replaced, actually, Andrei Arlovsky for that fight. And that's the reason why he left.
Yeah, so they're not willing to just kind of pay, do the one-off Yoki just until they get to the UFC.
They want to fucking stick about longevity and see what's going to, you know, happen with this shit. So, no, fair play to them. It's good to see promotions like that. And obviously, again, and Conor McGregor, who we caught up with earlier on. Conor is obviously the first Irishman ever to win a major world title in any of the, you know, the premier mixed martial arts promotions. Conor recently won the vacant featherweight title in his hometown of Dublin, Ireland, in the Helix. And, you know, it was an incredible time for mixed martial arts in Ireland. Conor trains at a SBG gym in Dublin. And what do you make of Conor, Mark? He's an individual, to say the least, yeah?
The guy knows how to put himself out there and how to market himself as a fighter. Like, we certainly talked to the MMA chunky lads with Gorgeous George and that, and they certainly seem to love him and seem to find his personality just... It's something which is really gonna win people over in the fight game on the bigger stage when he gets there. And I think he knows where he's going, we know where he's going, and they know where he's going as well. So
yeah, and obviously Conor was supposed to fight against Jim Ehlers in Amman, Jordan, but injuries forced Conor out of that brawl. So Conor caught up with us a bit earlier on today about his whole injury. He had to get an operation during the week, and it was obviously very short notice. But Conor couldn't make his first defence of the title. And this is what Conor says. So, guys, listen to the interview and we'll catch up in a few minutes.
This is Dennis Bermudez and you're listening to Talking Brawl.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by Cage Warriors featherweight champion Conor McGregor. Conor, obviously disappointing news. You took an injury there during the week on your cheekbone. How did the surgery go, Conor? And how disappointed are you to be ruled out of the fight against Jim Ehlers at Cage Warriors next month?
I mean, it was it's devastating, you know, but the surgery went well. I fractured my zygomatic arch, which is like the bone that goes from the eye socket to the out towards your ear. Surgery went well. I'm back at home now, so I was just rested up and try and keep positive, you know. Everything's had been flipped on its head. I was feeling really good, really sharp. I was going to go in there. I was going to win that fight. I was going to head over to Iceland then to train with Gunny for his UFC debut at the end of September. And then I was heading over to the UFC with them and all. So
brilliant.
Now that's all put on hold. And I don't know. Now I'm stuck in my house. Just, I don't know. It's not
the
best news.
Connor, how long have doctors said until you can go back into contact training again?
They said 6 weeks no contact, and they also said 3 months for it to fully heal. Shit. Now, they do say shit like that. They do talk a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Trying to cover their own backs, you know?
Yeah.
So, no, like, even compared to yesterday, I feel better. You know what I mean? I'm feeling better each day, so I'm hoping now I'm gonna get back to start training on up in my strength and conditioning on Monday, and then start back, and then hopefully in a week or two we'll get back on the mat at Apple. I'll be delighted, man. The sooner the better I can get on the mat and start rolling again. That everything, I'll just forget about everything else and just get back on track.
Brilliant. And obviously getting back a bit, Connor. You beat Dave Hill to win the featherweight title at Cage Warriors 47 in the Helix in Dublin, Ireland. How much of a moment, incredibly proud moment for the mixed martial arts fan around, you know, Europe and Ireland and the UK, for you to be the first ever Irish champion of a major promotion? How proud of you are you of that that fact?
You know, it's just I'm putting in so much training, you know, and to get that. To see it in front of me, see what I dedicated myself to and what I've sacrificed, and then to see that all happen in front of me, you know what I mean? It just proves that it really does pay off. If you just stick with what you're at and believe in what you're doing, good things will happen, you know? So it was an unbelievable moment. No matter what happens after this, I'll always take that to the grave, that moment, you know? You can't take that away from me, you know? Just, male world champion in Ireland, you know, that's something I'm really, really proud of. So I don't want to stop there. I don't plan on stopping there. Yeah. But it's something I'll definitely take to the grave with me, all right.
And Cage Warriors doing a fantastic job as well. How much credit do you give to the guys there for setting up that promotion and sticking with it through the years? Because it's been fantastic, especially the last two cards, I think, have been unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, when the contract was offered to me from Cage Warriors, I knew this is where it's at. At this level now, this is the promotion you want to be at. I mean, the amount of shows they have on each year, all different places of the world. I was supposed to be flying to Amman Jordan on Tuesday.
Mm.
You know, so it really is a top-class promotion. And it reminds me, you know when Tom Egan got the call for UFC 93?
That was our first
time really seeing what it was really like, you know, backstage and the the way they the best stuff and all. And when I signed the Cage Wars and had my first fight in Cage Wars, it was basically identical to the way the UFC runs its show. You know what I mean? It's basically identical.
Complete
so,
professionalism.
It's to get that experience and to be prepared, and then when the big show happens, you know, I'm comfortable in what's going on around me. I'm comfortable doing press stuff and PR and all that type of stuff, you know. So, I mean, it's a top class show, no doubt.
And Connor, it's the perfect launch pad in the sense that how close do you think you are to that UFC call up? The way they're trying to build over here with British and Irish fighters, how close?
I would have liked to think I was pretty damn close.
I am
still pretty damn close, you know. What I was thinking, beat the American in Jordan, go over for the last 4 weeks to Iceland and spar Gunny. Before his UFC debut, then go over to UFC Nottingham.
Yeah.
He's fighting a wild German. He's going to take him down. He's going to pass his guard and he's going to choke him. That would have been him getting his win. I would have defended my belt. We have the one foot in the door, and I would have seen me getting in right there and then.
And do you think it's one of those things that, because the grassroots of MMA in Ireland is so strong, and there's almost a cut-off to the mainstream then when, I suppose, the mainstream sports stations won't cover it in the UK in the same way. Do you feel there's just a cut-off in the middle ground? Because the grassroots is so strong. Like, the amount of young fighters coming up today, does it?
Yeah.
It's great
to
see.
For winning that belt and that big show and on and winning that belt, I didn't get one there. I wasn't in the paper or anything. There was no one trying to get in touch with me, and no, you know what I mean?
It's really depressing that the mainstream won't.
Yeah, it's terrible. Shocking.
You know, I've often talked to my dad about that. He's saying, like, when it comes to that, just, and you get to the big show, and then they want to do stuff with you, just tell them to fuck off. And that's
you're dead right, Connor.
You know what I mean? Not a bit of publicity, not nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not. But again, it's still only young. You know,
that's it. Yeah.
We have to get a guy in there with a win or two. You know what I mean? We have to get me in there and get a win or two, and then
Connor, that's what you are. that's what you are, Connor. You have to do it for us. Like, you're not going to build it here.
Yeah. Well, don't worry, guys. I plan to.
Yeah,
I plan to.
Yourself and there's two other good boys. Obviously, Owen Roddy, I think's joined. You guys are in Cage Warriors now, if that's correct, and Paddy Hoolan as well. They're two top fighters. What are your thoughts on those guys?
Roddy and Paddy signed. I'd imagine all the top guys in the country are going to be signed by them, and if they're not, they should be working towards that. You know what I mean? And Roddy and Paddy are two of the top guys in the country without doubt. Yeah. Roddy's dropping to bantamweight. He has that belt wrapped up. Paddy's dropping to fly as well. I'm not too sure. He actually said, I don't know whether Paddy is dropping to flyweight or staying at bantam, but. He actually, in that last fight as well against the Tinkoff, he got that belt. They didn't present the belt to him, but then Paul McVeigh pulled out, or Paul McVeigh handed back the belt and said he didn't want to fight Paddy.
Yeah.
So John Ferguson had got onto him and said, yeah, Paddy is now the bantamweight Cage Canada champion. And then Paddy signed with Cage Warriors, so, you know what I mean? So they're two champions. They're two champions coming in to be...
into the promotion.
To get them belts in Cage Warriors now as well, you know? Just trying to get all them belts.
Excellent stuff. It's getting strong.
I mean, once one of us gets in...
That's
there's
it.
A whole flood of us that's gonna come behind us.
Yeah, I think
behind
so.
Whoever gets in, me or whoever. Yeah. Whoever gets in
but
gets the win. It's going to be like the way the UK happened. You're going to see, before you know it, there's going to be 5, 6, and 7 guys in there competing and getting wins and... That's what I'm seeing in my head. That's what I'm visualising anyway.
And I know I know you've spoken to him as well. We've had on our show here before.
Gorgeous
Connor,
George.
Gorgeous George from MMAJunkie.com. And we've talked to George as well. And he thinks you're pretty close to a UFC contract. Have you heard anything or any inklings that might lead you towards that if you maybe win your next fight or two?
No, I haven't. I mean, when see, Gunny's dad, Halley, was the main contact between him and the UFC, and he negotiated that deal to get him in there, so he's been talking to them about me, but that's really all I've heard, you know. I'm just going to keep training, keep fighting, keep winning,
and what,
when it comes, but I mean, don't get me wrong, if I had been in Nottingham,
yeah, definitely
with Gunny, you better believe I'd be going straight up to Dana White with me belts wrapped around me and saying, listen, I'm the number one in Europe, you've no Irish guys in there, I'm the guy you want in there. I'd be going straight up to him,
just sticking with Edge, you know, you've Joseph Duffy. You know Joseph? How's he getting on? I know he was injured. Is he still on the scene? I haven't heard a lot from him at the moment. I interviewed him about a year ago. Is he still hanging around? Has his hand healed up, or do you know anything about that?
Sorry, one moment. Is he still around?
Is Joseph still fighting? Because I know he had a bad injury.
I don't really know. I don't really give a fuck, to be honest.
I'm just saying, more the Irish guys in that sort of way. But listen, Connor, you're
saying... Well, he's a Welsh guy. He's Irish Welsh.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, all right. Okay.
No, Joe's a good guy, I think I heard somewhere he's going to pro boxing now.
Okay.
I heard that now. I'm not sure how true that is or what, but that's what I'm led to believe, that he's packing in MMA and going to pro boxing.
Okay,
But if he wants, if he wants, we could have his pro debut in a pro boxing match. If he really wanted, or if he was stuck for an opponent, you can get in touch with me and I'll give him his pro debut if he wants.
Okay, a bit of a call out in the show here. This is Connor, keep coming. We love you on every week, mate. This is fucking deadly. Where do you see yourself in a year's time? Yourself, where do you see yourself? Where is Irish MMA going, and where do you see yourself in a year's time?
Well, when I wake up each morning, and I walk into the Jacks, stop it! Fucking cat on the back wall there. Grab him, dude. When I wake up in the morning, guys, and I walk into the toilet and look in the mirror, I see a big golden shiny crown, a king's crown on my head. You see it resting on the top of my head, and I see a lot of little number ones flashing all around me, That's where I see myself every day when I wake up, Brilliant. You know what I mean? So in a year's time, I see myself, that big shiny gold crown, big shiny gold belt, lots and lots of money, and that's it. And I'm just going to keep that image in my head and keep training hard and keep believing, and then,
Connor,
that's what happens.
Connor, what organization's belt will it be?
Oh, come on. There's only one organization's belt I want.
Brilliant, man. Absolutely.
Connor, I stared at him on that one as well.
Brilliant.
I mean, is there anywhere else you want to go?
Exactly.
I've said it before. It's UFC or peanuts. Yeah.
Well, Connor, are you going to walk up to Dana anyway in Nottingham? Just head over there with the belt and just tell him to his face.
Tell him we need you. We need
Listen, if that was the plan.
You can
that
still
was what
do
was
it.
In my head, and if I've seen him, that's what I'll be saying tomorrow. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Good but, stuff, man. Good
I don't know now what's happening. I was supposed to head over to Iceland. I was flying from my man Jordan to Iceland with John.
Yeah.
And then I was there till after we were going from there to UFC Nottingham.
Yeah,
and it was in my head. As soon as I see him,
jump
I'm gonna be straight at him. Yeah,
well,
so
listen,
that was the plan.
Listen, mate, I'm sure he knows about you by some of your performances recently. Been absolutely fucking fantastic. So, listen, man, thanks a million for coming on the show, and I hope the injury gets healed up soon, man. And
thanks very much, guys. I appreciate that.
We'll talk to you again.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Absolute legend, man. Cheers, man.
Thank you, man. Thanks very much. Bye bye.
And that was Conor McGregor, the man from around the corner here in Dublin. And it was their cheapest phone call we've ever had to fucking make. So it was great. Thanks, Conor. But,
Studio loves us.
No, Conor, in fairness, this guy is definitely, I think, the first guy that's going to get that UFC contract once he comes back and defends his Cage Warriors world title. And seriously, guys, that's a serious promotion. Check it out. It's really good. The best promotion in Europe. And it's probably second, third in the world at the moment. Behind Strikeforce and UFC, so check it out. And Mark, what's going on?
Well, I think he's the fascinating insight into what his plans are, and I hope he does actually get over to Nottingham and just get in Dana White's face and say, "Where's the contract, bitch?"
Yeah.
Except in a nicer manner, and possibly just asking.
Well, he's definitely the one ahead of the group at the moment because he is the champion of the Premier Promotion Europe. And we've had guys like Owen Roddy and Paddy Hewlin step into Cage Warriors. Just said they just recently signed contracts, so it's going to be very interesting to see how those guys get along for Irish mixed martial arts, which is clearly thriving at the moment. So moving on, obviously we had Rousey last weekend. Jesus Christ, Ronda Rousey, she'd beat half the fucking men on the planet at the moment, and I think Katie Taylor should step up and fight her. But we'll see what happens.
Did you see Noel, that I think Dave Meltzer did a list of the top 100 kind of googled and kind of talked about on social networking names in mixed martial arts and combat sports and boxing, and she's up there. I think she's at 7th now. Ronda Rousey,
I'd say so.
But 7th, like, she wasn't on the list last year. Like, you know, kind of just when you think of that, like, you know, only two other mixed martial arts fighters have ever been on the cover of the ESPN magazine.
And
now she's like, you know, she's there after being the champion for one fight. Well, she's like, she's someone who the entire world can take to. And I think when you see kind of kids who have no interest in mixed martial arts, kind of going, "Who is this Ronda Rousey girl? Why is she an armbar?"
But the girl, I always had, you know, a lot of time for. I was sort of up for Misha Tate when they were about fighting, because I didn't like the way Rousey went about her, you know, her sort of business with the, you know, talking up her fights and stuff. And
that's what Chael Sonnen does.
No, but I think we saw a little bit of that in. She looks immature and lost, really, in some of the shit she comes out and says. And
well,
and
I
on her ESP. I lost respect for her. She's a bit of a mouth, to be honest.
But no, I think we both kind of, like, you know, we talked to Luke about this, and the fact that I think that there is possibly an oversaturation. I certainly started not disliking her, but, like, I understand her marketability factor. But I certainly didn't love her as much by the end of the two All Access shows.
She was annoying.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
Yeah.
Very annoying.
If you were locked in a room with her for over an hour, you'd probably
jump out the window.
I mean, she'd probably be trying to armbar you.
Well,
but,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
She'd probably do something else to me. But the first one I got in. Wow, yeah, brilliant. But she is kind of one of those personalities that she's engaging on a promo level.
Yeah,
but on. You know, if you tried to have a normal conversation with her, you'd probably want to shoot yourself. You know?
Jesus, man, chill the fuck out.
Well, no, I don't mean shoot yourself. I don't mean shoot yourself.
I mean
shoot yourself.
I'll have to mute you if you stop shouting. Stop shouting, girl. I'll have to mute you. Stop shouting.
I don't mean
stop shouting. I'm joking. Listen, man, I seriously think she's a massive attitude problem.
But she's a massive. What sells is her attitude problem, the fact that she's a pretty hot blonde.
I'd rather see Cupcake Tate.
Yeah, but she's not going to sell as well, and you know that. Like, yes, Niall, you know that. Just because she wasn't
strokes.
Yeah, but yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is that would anyone be talking about? No, but would Miesha Tate be a big name now if it wasn't for Ronda Rousey?
Miesha's coming on this show in a couple of weeks, so she says again. But
oh shit! I keep on bad mouthing people before they come on. We can't get carried away with this. Yes, yes.
Okay, well, all right. Yeah.
Making your mark art. Sorry, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, guys. We're tired.
It's Ireland. We do these interviews late and stay up late.
What did you think of that Miesha Tate fight, though? It was pretty insane, wasn't it? It was the fight of the year.
Miesha fucking Tate went on about this fight being, she wasn't happy with performance coming into it. Fair enough, but like at the end of the day, Miesha, fair fucks. I'm holding my hands up. It was an awesome fight. It was really good, and I really enjoyed it. And you know, she put everything on the line, and getting that fucking armbar at the end as well. I thought it was a bit of a statement, really, to be honest with you. I thought she fished around and looked for the armbar to make a statement, and it finished like that.
It's a hard thing when you win a fight, which is.
I think she was over relaxed, and she knew she won that. She was going to win that fight, and she wasn't up for it because. It's very hard in that women's division as well to get up for a fight if it's not Ronda Rousey, no?
But no, I think that she won that fight. It's one of those things when you're in the fight of the night by a country mile and sadly not getting the bonus for it in Strikeforce, it's one of those things which is vaguely annoying because you don't get the joy of it. Like, that was possibly one of my fights of the year. That was really... And no one expected it of Julie Kedzie. Like, and I know you were a bit pissed off because, like, she's a Greg Jackson kind of protege as well. But I thought that she came out and no one was expecting anything of her. She was possibly... I heard interviews with her and she was kind of talking about how, well, she just wants to kind of go out there and have a good show and that was it. She has no smack talk or any game playing or anything like that. And Miesha went out there and she possibly walked into a world which she wasn't ready for, but she survived and she won in very impressive fashion and she fought through adversity. Wow.
Yeah, you know, it was pretty good. So... what do you want to see in the next 2 weeks? Where do you want to see this whole John Jones thing? Where's it going to go? What's going to happen? I'm confused.
You don't need to be confused. What's going to happen is that Chael Sonnen is going to. He's going to attack Victor Belfort on the side of the street. Victor Belfort is going to travel to Oregon to have words, to Portland, Oregon, with Chael Sonnen. And at this point, he's going to be jumped by the Chael storm. And
Jesus Christ.
Like then all of a sudden taking him out of the fight and Chael's going
it's
to...
It's like a fucking Batman comic in here, man.
Well, it's just logic and common sense. Look, sorry, can you explain anything to me that has happened in the last 48 hours? Come on. It has been a fucking Batman comic. None of it has made sense. It's people pulling out, I don't want to fight this, I don't want to do that.
Harpon shall be mutant.
You shan your fucking hole.
Just have, I'm in control. Sorry. Obviously...
Jesus,
well, one thing I have to mention as well, before we go, I have to mention, fuck me. Strikeforce last weekend. Let's not forget about this. And I think a lot of people have this week, the way mixed martial arts has gone with the whole UFC 151 thing. Strikeforce last weekend. Rousey Coughlin. The fucking fight on that Ovince St. Preux against TJ Cook. Holy fuck. Did someone see that fucking knockout? Holy fuck, man. That was knockout of the year award there. Unbelievable. In the third round. Incredible. The guy just smacked him, man. Oh, ridiculous. Sorry.
No, it was really good. It was one of those things, you know, when the spotlight isn't prepared for it. It was amazing. I suppose...
knockout of the year in my eyes so far, definitely, anyway. So we'll leave that. And as well, lads, listen, before we go as well, we've told you about the competition. If you hashtag Talking Brawls... was that it? Talking Brawls.
Hashtag Talking Brawls.
We'll put you in... a random lottery.
And you have to be following Talking Brawls as well.
You have to be fucking
Talking Brawls.
Following Talking Brawls.
Jesus Christ.
At Twitter, at Talking Brawls. You have to be following us as well to be in a chance of winning.
And you can also find us at Mark Moriarty 101 and Niall McGrath
4. And you can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Talking Brawls.
God, we're everywhere. We're literally everywhere. It's kind of like a.
yeah.
Well, not everywhere, but we aren't on Bebo.
And listen, I hope everyone has enjoyed the podcast today. No, we've had a good crack again today. It's been a very unfortunate week. We're very disappointed there's no card on next weekend. Obviously, it's a huge shame. And
yeah, look, we weren't here last week. We're here for longer this week. We get bigger every week. We're like a monster.
Shut up. Get away.
Fuck.
Crawl back out of your own ass.
I'm not being big-headed.
I've got to meet you again. You're too annoying. I'm only joking.
You're Mark, damn right.
Say your goodbyes right now.
My name's Mark. Guys, it's been beautiful. We'll see you next week. This was a fairly emotional podcast.
Guys, listen, obviously appreciate your time as always. And again, next week we'll have some cracking guests on. I hope you really enjoyed today's show. And obviously sorry to the guys about UFC 151 next weekend. That's not going to happen. And the fighters and everything's gone on this week. It's a bit of a sad week, I think. But we'll bounce back next week. Loads more shit on Talking Brawl. So see you later, bitches.
Well, you're a prick.
Cheerio, guys. Talk to you later.